outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Chain. The God Chain. The God
Chain. I'm loving how absolutely green our hills are. Have you walked in the hills? Have you hiked at all? Do you see them?
Yes.
Aren't they stunning?
Yes. For 3 months of the year, this looks like Ireland. And then the rest of the year...
But not normally. Normally, it's only like 2 weeks. And then it's like nothing but burnt crisp.
Yeah, it's already starting to kind of...
It's fading. Yeah, I see the fading glory, but... Oh.
Everybody else gets excited about spring. Here, everything dries up. As soon as the sun comes out, rain stops. The Golden State. Best marketing tool ever. Weeds.
Is that really where it comes from?
Yes, dead weeds.
Dead weeds is where they got the Golden State, and someone just put a little spin on it.
If the Belgians
that's
had
that's not just Wayne. That's actually true.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Are you?
It's like the Belgians have been able to do that. They would still have all the fries, and the French would never have nothing. But California, somebody market the state incredibly well. They put a bear on the flag and call it the Golden State, and bears eat people.
I know, but we're down to our single primary political state of just going like, dude, I just don't feel like what I care about and the values I have, they don't fit any in this sphere anymore.
Not in this state. Nope. Not now.
That becomes really discouraging from a standpoint of going like, okay, I can't force anyone to think differently, but it seems as if our whole structure, we're getting squeezed out of being able to have much of a meaningful dialogue.
No. When you have that much majority, nobody wants a dialogue. We're going to ram our agenda down your throat.
I know.
And you can like it or move.
And my wife gets these like little posts where you start to get wind of some of the plans and the ideas that they're wanting. And I'm just going like, that's going to be disastrous.
You got to stop reading that stuff. People been saying that since the 70s.
Well, I'm glad that the things that they were concerned about haven't fully
most of them keep enacted. Happening. They just keep happening. It just keeps going that direction, and there's not a lot of compassion among people who are supposedly so compassionate for everybody. There's not much compassion for people who don't see things the way they do.
Yeah, and it seems as if our culture is okay now with, hey, whoever has the majority position, they will force their opinion on the others.
Yeah. Isn't that kind of where democracy ended up? That's where it is in Washington.
Yeah, I don't think it...
At least Washington switches hitters now and then.
Yeah, my idealistic self was like, isn't that supposed to have brought us to the value of a dialogue and us finding a bridge builder type mutual solution? Why do you think we don't go there?
It's become about power.
Yeah?
It has. It has become about power and can I get enough? Because I don't just have a point of view. It's different than yours. I'm right and you are wrong. So when I get power, I make you live what I want you to live.
But it never works.
It works. Both sides do the same thing.
I know, but it never works. It almost galvanizes the divide.
To make it work, you have to oppress people who disagree with you. And eventually...
I don't like that.
No, I man, you're preaching to the choir, boy. I've been screaming about this for 30 years.
No, I know. I just... Because I end up going like, nothing's ever enduring if it isn't agreed upon on the inside. God does not do that to me. He's right. I'm pretty sure I'm wrong. If ever the two of us disagree, I'm pretty sure I'm probably the one that's wrong there.
I'm pretty sure about that too.
But he never forces his will on me. And I just go like, that's extraordinary.
Because how do you force anybody in a real way? Like I was talking about this with Julie on last week's podcast. We were talking about parenting. And you can force your kid to do the right thing. Like we're having a family night. We're all going to be together. If they're there upset, bitter, and detached, you have not accomplished anything.
Not at all.
This is not a family night.
Not at all.
So how do you promote respect and buy-in and all that kind of stuff? And I think relationally people get it. I just don't think nationally. And I do think this is not the American people I meet and talk to. This is the power brokers in both parties, the lobbyists.
Really?
Yeah, I think most Americans are saying, look, I see it this way. I know you disagree. Let's find a place where we could share the platform.
You would conclude that the mass missing middle realm of people are reasonable?
The last I negotiated bridge builder stuff, yeah. I did find that. I found that everywhere I went. If I could get 80, 85% of people to buy into, let's share this environment. Yes, you see this differently than I do. I see it differently than you. But can we come up with stuff that's fair to those differences? And people could. But we didn't have anybody in the room that was paid to keep up the fight. And I think that's the problem.
Wow.
Right now, I think, take immigration. You take 100 responsible Americans. You can take progressives to conservatives all across spectrum. You get 100 people in a room and give them a month to say, craft us an immigration policy. They could do it. I have no doubt. I don't think it's that hard. I don't. But somebody, it's not going to serve their political interests. It's not going to serve the wedge issue they need or the money they need or whatever. There's too many paid agendas that hang around these issues that they really have no interest in solving the problem. They like the problem. They profit from the problem. And that's why you can't solve it. Republicans and Democrats are both that way. Republicans want cheap labor and the Democrats want a wedge issue. So they're not going to solve immigration. Trump had the White House, had the Senate and House of Representatives, couldn't get it done.
We're using air quotes.
Couldn't get it done. No, I'm just saying Republicans were never serious about it. Obama had the Democrats in the Senate and the House. He couldn't get anything done.
Yeah, I don't think the established order wants to see much of anything. I think they kind of like where they're entrenched. And changing that into a problem-solving dynamic, it just doesn't seem like they're motivated to that end.
No one is. That's sadly, the people in power and lobbying groups, all they can see is my, and there's millions of dollars at stake.
And then, I mean, that's kind of true throughout many institutions, not just political ones.
True. Self-interest, man. I tell you what, this would be a great article if you want to get into this dog right here.
But we'll dive in.
It's called Big Tech's Original Sin. This is by Charles Wartzel, and I forget where it was, but we'll link to it here.
Big Tech's Original Sin.
Yeah, okay. By the way, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
I'm Brad Cummings.
And before we get into this.
This is the God Journey.
Can we talk? Yeah. Oh, that's right. It is. Can we talk Kenya a minute?
Yes, please.
Yeah, we've had some, Sarah and I were just figuring out yesterday, you know, what this whole thing has meant, because we've been giving $10,000 a month, live stream listeners, God Journey folks, whatever. We've been able to give $10,000 a month to help these five tribes in Pokot reach some kind of sustainability. And well, actually $9,000 a month to them or so. There's $1,000 a month that's gone to this school that we tried to support. And yet, even though we tried to limit it to that, every few months they've got some kind of big need, new need, $18,000, $12,000, $20,000. You know, we just have prayed, discerned. We were looking the other day, we have put over $2 million into Kenya. It's the whole of us who listen, who care. Some people give like $10 a month. Some people give $25. One guy gave us $500,000. So it's been crazy as to how that's happened. But about 3 months ago, the school that we've supported, which is a free school, this woman just had this heart. These kids are not being educated, can't afford it, started a school, it's free. So we've been supporting that. And their well ran into their sewer system in a big flood thing. Yeah. Kids were getting sick. State came in and closed them down. They rose, said, we need a well here. It's $32,000 for a well. It's not only the school, it's the community around also draws from that same well. And they just said, we don't have any other option. We close the whole thing, whatever. And so we prayed, talked to people, felt like, yeah, okay. So we gave $32,000 to drill this well. They drilled the well a few weeks ago, and I mean, it hit the mother load. They have hit an aquifer that's purer than any other water, I guess, in Kenya, and pumping faster than three times what they were expecting. In fact, when the state came in and certified the pureness of the water, they told them, they said, you need to bottle this stuff. You could sell this stuff all over. And so one of the things we've been dealing with sustainability is, how does a school find sustainability?
Right.
And now it looks like we may have an option to do that. Same time that's happening up here in Pokot, the five villages, tribes that we've been helping, all of a sudden a new tribe comes out of the bush and shows up starving to death. Kids dying, pregnant moms dying, people just dying. And they showed up going, can you help us? We need food. And so we get back to that need. Like, oh my gosh, how long, oh Lord? Well, and, you know, again, put it before our board, because we always put that money out even before we get stuff in, just because we have to. The need is now. I can't take a month to fundraise for it. But between, you know, book sales and traveling and money, Livestream has extra. So we've been pumping it into that where we can. And So we put 18,000 over there, and we no more got that sent off than a whole new tribe. Because this is a new tribe. Now, another new tribe has come from almost the Ugandan border and come up there and just sat down and said, we're not leaving until we have food. We have no food. We're dying. Everybody's dying.
Do you know why there's a complete loss of agriculture sustainability? Because,
well, these are, as I understand it, these are nomadic tribes. So they've had cattle. They've been they've just lived off the land, and they've wandered around.
They've been foraging.
And then, and then the droughts just wiped out their cattle. They have no cattle left, so they all settled into villages. But they still don't have anything to eat.
Because they haven't cultivated.
They don't know anything about agriculture. They don't have water. Right. They walk, you know, 26 kilometers to get water. So we've drilled 6 wells. We've started 6 farms up there. We've, you know, just people's generosity has allowed us to do an awful lot for these Kenyans, like $2 million worth. And these tribes, the 5 we've been helping, are about a year from July are supposed to be fully sustainable without need for outside income, which has been our passion all along. They
and
do.
Have you felt like they've embraced that?
The tribes?
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yeah. They want it. And they're, the problem is the agricultural stuff. We planted these agricultural things. They grow sweet potatoes and, you know, whatever they grow this and they're huge. But now the people have gotten hungry because they had some rain for a while and things were evened out a bit. And then this drought has come back in a fury, I guess, this fall or this winter. And now they just don't have, they've been digging up some of the vegetables early before they mature just to get something in their bellies. Or the one tribe that came in, the new tribe that came in that needed some resources. And that 18,000 is going to take care of them for a couple of months. And then what? Mm. What's beyond that?
How many people are we talking about?
120,000 are the ones we've been helping. I don't know. I haven't heard numbers for these new tribes, these two new tribes.
Wow.
But we keep checking. There's no UN presence there. There's no Kenyan presence there. Because these people don't consider themselves Kenyan. England drew a border around them, and included them as Kenyans. They don't even speak the same language for the most part. And they speak some same language, not English. But so it's kind of the government's just kind of left them on their own. And now, and it's not just Pokot. There's two others, Samburu and Turkana, two other counties have the same problem going on that Pokot does. And now some resources are into those two counties. Pokot's kind of the last place on earth, and they're trying. I mean, part of our plan was to get the UN, get the government in there helping out because the need's just humongous. But right now, that's where it is. So I'm overwhelmingly grateful to those of you that have shared with us and given and called and said, hey, we're in. Thank you so much. Appreciate it a ton. The other side, I am as exhausted as I can be. Every time a new request comes in, gee whiz, do we keep, how much do we do? Can we feed all of Kenya? We can't. So where do we say no? And it's not easy. And we've said no at times. It's been painful to say no. And it's been costly for people. But it's been a decision of trying to seek God and best we know.
So what specifically are you asking for?
Right now we're covered. I would hope, I'm praying, because I as I push towards 70, I really don't want to be doing this. Now, God may have a different plan. I would rather be writing and traveling and doing some of those kind of things. But so I don't know what God has in mind exactly. And, you know, he gets to prevail for some reason.
It's God.
God after all.
I trust him for
doing And I
that.
Like him. I like him.
I do.
He sometimes puts us through the ringer, but... yeah, so I would love someone else to come out of the woodwork and say, we'll handle these new tribes. We'll take care of that. But I don't know how that's going to happen. Someone suggested we do GoFundMe and set a campaign there because that gets to people outside of our audience.
Right.
I've never thought of because, we've been getting enough from our audience. But, again, that puts us caretaking this for however long. And there's a fatigue level. I can feel it spiritually and emotionally. I'm sure God can grace me through that if that's where we go.
Right.
I was real hopeful about a year things would be sustainable. So I don't know. I just, people stay in touch. If we need funds. We put it online so people know that there's a current need. But like I said, we send 10,000 a month and we don't take that much a month in. So we're always putting, there's an ongoing need. If people want to help us support, that'd be awesome.
My son Jonathan is riding across America for charity work.
I heard about that.
Yeah, and they've had a marvelous response. They've now mapped out their entire journey, and I think they've got 45 days. I think.
So they're not on it yet.
They're not on it. They, okay. they leave May 20th, and I think they
go start where?
Up in San Francisco
and end
In New York.
In New York. Wow.
For the 4th of July.
Yeah. Ideally.
Yeah, ish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ish.
We hope.
Wow. Oh, but I mean,
it could take them 4 days just to get through Manhattan. Do they know that?
Every year Azusa Pacific has had a team that has sort of taken on this cause, and it's been pretty exciting. I mean, this has really fired him up. The whole reality of the need for clean water.
Yeah.
And just the sustainability of life. You're just going like, we absolutely in the first world take that for granted. And for other people, it's like that is their daily quest for survival.
Water is life. Without it, yeah. And if it's dirty water, it just makes you sick. Yeah.
Yeah. And you just go like, whoa. So
I met the guy from Charity Water. You know that?
The
big guy. Yeah. He had read So You Don't Want Church Anymore.
Been, Scott.
Yeah, Scott.
Yeah.
Profoundly impacted his life. So I had lunch with him one day in New York. He's never come to L.A. to spend time with me. I don't know what that's about.
I had dinner with him up in that Bethel Redding place.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'd gone up there. They did a Shack screening, and he was doing a conference the next day. And a DJ buddy of mine came and surprised me. And then we went out to dinner, and then Scott was there because they were doing an event together the next night.
Huh.
And it was just fascinating to it's one of the charities that's like they do not 100% of what they take in goes completely to what they do. They don't play the overhead game.
Yeah, we don't either.
And I'm just going like, that is so rare and that is so extraordinary. And it's been fun because like each one of the kids that is on this whole riding trip, it's like, you know, they're not like super bicyclists. Like
super bicycles.
They're trading to figure out how to do this, and they had to learn how to change their tires. I mean, it's just like, this is a big deal. And 100% of what they raise is going to the charity. They have to pay their own expenses the whole way along. And I'm just going like, golly, how absolutely cool is that? And it's been wild. Cause I'd encourage the GoFundMe because Jonathan's just, he's put it out there far and wide, and he's raised everything that he needs.
It's awesome.
And nobody's going to get tax deduction for what covers the incidental things. And they've gone beyond what they need, and they're able to give a nice big fat check to Charity Water.
Cool.
So
I last about 10 minutes on a bicycle seat. I don't even know how guys go.
I mean,
hundreds of miles, much less thousands.
I just go like, that's a long trek. I did that with Jared to drop him off at Washington, D.C., and we, driving in a motor car, it took 3-4 days.
A motor. Oh, yes, you had know, like this, like yeah. You were in a sidecar on a bicycle, motorcycle.
Like, it wasn't pedals.
I was going,
and you're going like, oh, my land.
We should have that on Facebook Live.
Yes.
That was funny.
And my daughter's heading to Uganda.
I'll be in Uganda in July. Crazy.
So, yeah. Let's raise some money and help these people out.
If it's on your heart, man, you got into places to give it. This is actually, people will live or not live based on what food we can get to them. That's where it is.
Wow.
And to think no one else is there. There's no other. I mean, we've been there now 4 years. No other NGO has shown up. No UN, no Kenya government stuff. Nobody. It's amazing. They just would let these people die, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah. It's sad. I guess they figure they probably should have, you know, grown crops years ago or something. I don't know what people are thinking. We'll just let these people die. And somehow God's put us there and God's made us a resource. And I'm not complaining about that. I mean, God has just been, it's crazy how we got involved, crazy how it's progressed, crazy how God brings the right connection at the right time
but
to help us make them.
But they are embracing their own desire for sustainability.
Oh, yeah.
They're not getting addicted to outside.
No, the whole model is when they get a resource, other than, you know, it's critical. You're dying of hunger. We'll give you food, right?
Right.
But for everything else, whether it's toilets, whether it's education, whether it's other, it's 50% sweat equity from the tribe and then 50% resource from the West. So
that's,
it's a
50-50 awesome
model. In the end, are you kidding? Man, they anybody would. That's a lot of the new charity stuff is to realize people don't want to be taken care of. There's enough creativity and passion in their heart. They just need the tools to be able to implement that stuff. So
yeah, I forget what I watched, but it was like, I think the punchline is when helping is hurting.
Yeah, that was that whole, what was the name of that? It's a Netflix.
I forget. I don't know if it
Hunger
was.
Hunger Inc.
Yeah.
I think it was Hunger Inc.
Yeah. Where you just go like, my gosh, in our lack of really being effectively directed, the well-intentioned desire to help has actually flooded and messed up some of the local markets.
Well, it's also been well-intentioned to help, but to help us most of all. So, like, we're going to send free shoes over there because it's good marketing ploy. You buy a shoe from us, we send free shoes over there. But then you put all the cobblers out of business all the way around the world. Nobody makes shoes anymore except they wait for free ones from the U.S. So everything we do, or the whole Haitian earthquake thing, we started sending rice in there because our rice farmers in America
had a surplus.
Way too much. They wanted to get, so we brought it in for free and put all the rice farmers in Haiti out of business. You can't compete with, that's what they keep saying.
You can't compete for free.
You can't compete with free.
Well, I mean, Google does that on this planet. They're ruining so much. I mean, big business is original
Google?
Sin. I mean,
oh, yeah. Back to our thing.
Well, yeah.
Big tech's original sin. You just mentioned Google.
I did.
You could put Facebook in there. You could put that pirates at Amazon in there.
Yeah. Oh, trust me.
Trust me. We put them on the boat.
Trust me. I know the pirate.
Not only do we put them on the boat, we're trying to get them to walk the plank. Anyway, greed. It's about greed. That's the top line, the lead. When it comes to explaining why Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter have become hotbeds for extremism, propaganda, and bigotry, there's a tendency to overcomplicate things. Tech companies are dealing with thorny problems that most likely have no universally satisfying outcome. But the last few years have taught us that there's an explanation of the toxicity of these online platforms. The original sin, it seems, is its prioritization of growth above all else and at the expense of those who use the services.
Not good.
No, even talked about, they got rewarded, the program designers, algorithm, doohickeys, whatever. They had quotas for, we need X amount of people to stay on at Facebook for X amount of hours.
Right.
So it's just, the whole thing was, how do we keep people engaged?
Right.
Even if we appeal to their worst desires and ambitions.
Well, it doesn't matter why they're engaging. We just want to create engagement because that's how the dollars keep turning.
That's exactly.
Give me the clicks, give me the little tasks, and they've turned us into little mice on their treadmills.
They have, if you play that game. You don't have to play that game.
I know, but I don't think a lot of people recognize. I mean, I read this book called The Shallows. It talks about elasticity of the brain and how even the way in which our devices and what we're spending time, it's changing what's
our
happening
brain
our brains,
yep.
Where our capacity for the long-term kind of thinking, the more philosophical things, that the more spiritual functions, your brain has got – it's limited, and so it shifts its stuff over to the little tasks, and we stop doing the things that work for long-term – the character-shaping things.
Right.
And you're just going like, oh, my lands, we're being turned into our devices.
For the immediate little hit of joy that you get because a little screen goes bong, 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 and shows colors.
Yeah. And you just go like, I don't know that everyone out there has any clue that's what's happening to us.
Same way with church, don't you think? Don't you love that segue? Jumped right in there. No.
Okay, I'll unpack that a little bit.
Oh, just down a little bit. I just saw this next one line lead to prayer. It says, growth at any cost, period. It's the mantra familiar inside Facebook.
Oh.
I remember back in the early 80s when the whole church growth thing.
Movement. Yeah.
That was early 80s where it became a big, big deal. And it was growth at any cost other than, you know, they wouldn't.
Not looking to openly.
Have live sex shows on the stage. I mean, they had some restraint for Pete's sakes. So it wasn't that, but it was growth. That the growth is, it's like
whatever's
cancer.
Whatever's going to fuel that, let's have more of that.
Isn't that what cancer is? Cancer cells that just go on this growth binge. They just, growth is the only reason it wants to exist. It doesn't sustain the body. It begins to rob from the body because growth is its deal.
What's even worse? It's on rebellion to the body. It starts to look at the normal body as the one that it attacks and consumes.
Yeah, because it's got to grow. It's got to grow bigger and bigger. I get to eat you. I'm going to eat you from the inside, which really is horrible.
Yeah.
I'd save that a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I reading this article, just going, that just seems to be always in our lives. And that's what we got to look at. I mean, because there's a point, oh, bad tech companies or church growth movement. Yeah. But it really comes down to us. Is what we're concerned about a bottom line thing? Are we bottom lining with either our income, our career success, whatever you want to measure and whatever you want to fight for is going to, what you described earlier, take you away from the character, spiritual, more important contemplations of the human heart. And we're losing that.
Yeah, well, it's wild in terms of you don't ever master anything in a short period of time. And it's like we've lost our capacity to look at the long-haul reality of going, what really is going to produce enduring change? And it's like we've become addicted to these small little tasks, these little repetitive things, little dopamine hits of quicker the better, the faster. And you're just going like as if efficiency – and I'm not thinking inefficient is a big value, but in the name of efficiency.
Well, no one wants to stare at a screen for 3 seconds while something loads. Doggone it. Give it to me now. 3 seconds. Yeah. I got to have it, man. I'm short on dopamine today. I need a hit.
It's the lunacy. Well, it just doesn't. It's sad. It looks like the hamster will just keep spinning faster, faster, faster. And you're just going to get, but we're not fundamentally getting anywhere. And we're not even staying the same. We're being changed.
Yeah.
Because the more you spend time doing that stuff, the thing that just alarms me is the less capacity you have to actually do like long form reading. And then the meditative musing of the what meaneth this application in your life. It's like those become really arduous tasks that become difficult the more I'm addicted to this small little things we do to get clicks to make the big tech rich.
And if what you're saying is true, and I'm sure there's lots of research on this, because obviously science would care about demonstrating this, but I'm a little cynical today. It's been a tough day already. I can feel the pain. It's got to make it harder for us to hear and sense the divine. If you go down that road,
yes.
If you uncritically give yourself to the amusements or the enticements of this age. And that's always been the enemy's design. Amuse them, entertain them, get them out of a framework of being able to just listen and hear and respond to that voice that triggers the deepest hungers of your soul. And yeah, is that getting squashed in all this?
It is.
I think it is.
It is. And that was the alarming thing. Cause you know, it's like, I'm not some big brain science guy as if I understand all of that. You're just going like, wow. But they did have just a whole mass of immeasurable charts and data to back up the fact that it's like, guess what? We're not as hardwired and stuck as we thought. The brain has an incredible elasticity. And sadly, it's being shaped and modeled and conformed to the images of this age. And that's completely depleting a lot of our spiritual functions.
It is.
And
then
like,
people say, I can't seem to hear Jesus. I don't seem to recognize him in my life. And that's because we have filled it to the margins. And like you're saying, if the brain is actually being rewired so that we're less inclined and able to focus on the contemplative
both.
Things. Yeah.
And it's like those, unfortunately, are self-reinforcing. Because it's not like, I don't want to do that ever. You know, again, but the more my brain is rewired to these tasks, I really am being conformed into the image of my device that I'm beholding.
Yeah. And every big business in the world, and every little business, is trying to hold your eyeballs as long as they can.
They're trying to meet you there.
And it's all, and I think that's, and I know we had this discussion before, people get upset because you just even mention there's some flaws in capitalism, then they, sure, you're a socialist, but the idea that governments businesses who are working for their bottom line are doing what's in the best interest of you as a person is absurd.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that's true.
I mean, that
wouldn't be ubiquitously true, but the businesses that are churning out the profits, they largely have adopted the at any cost. Let's get those results.
Yeah, just look at the sexual titillation that is used in from weather girls to how people dress in movies to what. And I don't even mean the R-rated horrible movies. I just mean the level
capture
of enticement.
Eyeballs. How do I do that?
And keep that arousal thing going on So people will buy our product. Well, look, I mean, how we sell cars with young models sitting on the hoods while you're going through the car shows or whatever. I mean, it's just ubiquitous how we're willing to degrade the human condition in advance of someone making a profit.
Okay, so where does Jesus come into all this?
He's not at the car show.
No, I know. I understand
well,
that.
He's probably there at the car show, but he's not there for reasons other people are at the car show.
You know, I get that. But I mean, what you're describing is, unfortunately, it is the world that seems to be looming large and larger.
Yeah.
And it's hard to not be sucked into that whole space. I mean, I don't know that I want to morph into this whole thing, but
before you go there.
Yes.
We're running low on time. I want to kind of answer what you were just talking about. And then we'd say we get there, we'll do it next episode or whatever. I was with some young people last week, went back in on the East. And one of the things that goes along with this whole being drawn into just the amusements of the age and even the better amusements, I'm not talking about just necessarily the real nasty ones, even the better ones, is going along with that is a loss of people recognizing God's reality. That God is someone to be known, that God's presence is enduring, that it's something to seek. So they compare the deadness of the religious experience that they've had with the amusements of the world. And my goodness, that's going to win every time because the world's got toys, right? And religion's got sometimes just rituals and things you're supposed to believe. Then you find out half of those were not true. So why do you want to play with the rest of them? I'm working on a little article that I haven't finished yet called Why God? And it's not, why God? Why'd you let that? It's why God? Why would you want to know and follow the living God? Because most of us, my generation, it was all, the reason you loved God's because you don't want to go to hell. That was the whole, it was a whole fear thing.
Yeah, no, which is why that frankly, that doesn't work very long. That doesn't create a transformed life that is tractor beamed into a relationship of engagement with the living God.
No, it'll get people into religion though.
It's just fire insurance.
If you're afraid you're going to burn forever, you'll do almost anything.
Yeah. Sign up for 60, fire
70
insurance.
Years. Yeah, yeah.
But nobody sits there every day and is reading their insurance policy. It's just it's a one-time transaction. And I hope I never need it.
Yeah, your point.
I think they've done that to salvation.
Okay, keep going.
I think they've done that transaction. They have their insurance policy because that was the sales pitch that they responded to. And hey, there's wisdom in it. If I can avoid burning in hell, and you're saying raising my hand and praying this prayer is going to change that, then I think a lot of people have responded with wisdom going, okay, sounds like a good deal.
I'll take it.
I'm in. I bought it.
Yeah, but then it kind of gets mucky there, doesn't it?
But
well, if you don't keep coming.
But
if you don't keep, if you're not here on Sunday morning, if you're not.
I think that's where they do heapfuls of shame and why don't you come here? And
I thought you were
going to
say something else than shame. I was going, wow, this will be fun. You know, no. You held that shh too long.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
Shame.
But I do think that's where the whole bit of religion is in the shame management business. It's like if I can give you enough law to show you how many flaws you have and what a bad person you are, then I'll make you feel better for a second because then I'll touch on the gospel again. And I'm just, I sit in service and I'm just like, oh, stop doing that.
Yeah.
It doesn't lead to transformation.
Yeah, I had this discussion, I was talking about the cross recently and an appeasement-based contingent was there struggling with a different view of the cross than the appeasement, keeping God, Jesus died to keep God happy for us and all that. And I looked at him, I said, you know, even those of you that believe in appeasement, you really don't believe Jesus accomplished it on the cross because you still keep appeasing God. You still have to every day. It's like, well, okay, he did it then, but if I don't go to church, read my Bible, pray, give money, if I don't do those things.
You got to renew the policy. So there is an expiration.
Well, the expiration, it seems to be weekly, right? It expires on Saturday night. You got to punch your ticket. The rent is due. If you don't pay the rent. I'm sorry, dude. And so even the people who most aggressively articulate the appeasement view don't believe the cross satisfied even that appeasement. They're afraid of it.
Yeah.
So they keep appeasing. They've got to keep, did I do enough? Scott, am I sharing the Bible
enough?
Am I sharing God enough? Yeah. And it exhausts people because it doesn't give them that. And I think when I'm talking to these young people, and they're going to be saying, is God really there, and why would I want to walk with him? If he's the killjoy that wants to push me away from the things I enjoy, which And that's how sin works in us, right? There's things we enjoy that God's saying, you know, those are really not helping.
All wear off. I mean, I think that's. I'm finally glad that a lot of the things that draw me off the path, I'm actually more aware that doesn't work. That doesn't satisfy.
And when you get older, you'll not only be more aware, you'll be unable to anyway. So that makes it easier to give them up.
Well, thanks for that encouragement.
Yeah, it's welcome. Okay. Freedom gets easier. My point.
No, but I look at that and I just go like, God has marvelously allowed me to understand him as a person. And so I just...
And to know him as a presence in the world. Yes.
And I just end up going like, golly, if that's not what you're being converted to. See, because I look at...
People could play a drinking game with the God journey. Just every time you say golly, they take a drink.
That would be good. Yeah, like God pong.
Golly.
Golly. No, I look at when Paul says in 1 Corinthians 2:4, it's like, I don't want your faith.
2:4, kind of smeared that. Yeah. Yeah, somewhere.
No, it's in 2, and I think it's verse 4.
Oh, I think
that's the address, okay?
Okay, cool.
I don't want your faith resting on persuasive words of men's wisdom, but rather in power and demonstration of the Holy Spirit.
1 Corinthians 2:4, but you're there.
That's what I said.
I said Galatians.
No, Corinthians.
I can't. I'm not listening to this podcast. I got too much to do. I'm looking at my iPhone.
1 Corinthians 2:4. That's not just a verse for charismatics. It's like if we don't get converted to a person in which we experience the knowing of him, you are going to be captured by religion and you're going to be stuck on that little treadmill.
That's with our kids too, right? If our kids don't come alive to that God is not just like some Santa Claus mom and dad still believe in. And that's where a lot of kids end up. Like, I know mom and dad really believe in this, but it's kind of like Santa Claus. I don't think there really is
one. If it's only a case of the shoulds, because I've been told to, then it just...
Or if it's just a figment of someone's imagination, and it's just robbing me. That's robbing me of the fun I want to have. Because that's really where flesh is. I just want to have a good time and somebody to pay for it. You know, that's... The flesh drives us there. And it's only something more character-based... purpose-based, significance-based, that will take us out of indulgence and self-preference to a life that's worth living, a life that's worth risking for, struggling for, and being transformed in.
Yeah. I mean, I have, we've been doing this Sunday night thing in a local church, and they
you're
actually...
You've been going Sunday night services.
Sunday night service, yeah. I've been doing a service, and... But what's so amazing is we really have every time, it's as if the manifest presence of God has been wonderfully there. And I'm sitting there going like, oh man, I can't wait to corporately get together and see what he does next. It hasn't been spectacular, but it has been him. And I'm just going like, I still have my wonderful own times with Jesus. That hasn't stopped, but the getting together and the corporate pursuit, I honestly can say I have missed that. I haven't missed services, but I have missed the corporate times of enjoying his presence with other people, because that's different than just me and Jesus having my own time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been absolutely fantastic, because I'm just going like, people that have known God 30, 40, 50, it's a bunch of gray hairs that are the bulk of the audience, that they're just going like, this is the best thing ever. And I am so tickled with the sense of going like, God, you are doing yourself an amazing job of bringing to life folks that thought they knew you for a long time, but they didn't know you like this. And it's been a blast.
Does it take a service?
I don't think it does, but it's what's interesting is it takes a pursuit, and I don't know that we have a lot of people that have any sense of how to, quote, pursue God together apart from a service. I'm not excited about it. So the truth is
right. No,
I don't need the service. I don't necessarily need the guitar. I don't need the, you know, how to gin it, but
No, I'm grateful that people have that experience there. I just, people can have it in other places too, in other ways.
It's not just an individual thing. Yeah. But what's so interesting is I think they've been without it so often. They don't really have much of a grid for getting together with that as the focus in mind.
Which is sad.
How do we gather with the living God?
That's what disturbs me most about the emptiness of religion, is that there's just so many people that are getting inoculated against the reality of God just because they hear his stuff, play the games, and they think, well, this is what it is. This is all it was meant to be. And it's not. It was meant to be so much more.
Absolutely.
Of God inviting us into. I have a perception. I look at this why God thing. One of the things I've really appreciated is, man, I love what God has changed in my life. I'm glad I'm not the Wayne of 25 years ago or 20 years ago. I mean, without that transformation, without God inviting me to even make decisions that are not in my self-interest, at least on the surface,
right,
turn out to be some of the best things I ever did in terms of letting God take shape in me. And to me, that's the adventure that we get in this world. And then we'll see what's in the next.
So, no God vaccinations.
Yeah, that would help. But there's a lot of them out there.
No, I know.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.